Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Decisions, decisions, and decisions. And to lead us in that decision is Michael Townsend, and Michael is the president of Carpe Diem.
Correct.
Inc. And what we're talking about is decisions, decisions, decisions. We came across this a few shows ago where somebody's caring for a parent and say, gee, I wish I had put into place X, Y, or Z prior to. Not that it's that easy to be able to take the keys away from them or to do something so that they didn't hurt themselves financially or physically. And then, shifting it one gear down, what could somebody in their 50s or 60s do now, saying, you know, I'm headed down that path, why don't I do something? And the thought came to my mind is, you've been there and done it, and you've done it, recognizing
it. I have. That's right. I've done that for myself and now helped a number of clients to make those kinds of choices, and then to express them for themselves.
Oh.
I'll back up a little bit and say that some years back, I had a stroke, which for a really healthy guy for so many years, I was in shock that that this had happened. But it was a wake-up call for me. And it told me that I was at that point in my at the end of my 50s, and it was time for me to make some decisions that I had put off before then. I guess assuming, like most of us, that I was immortal and that this would never be an issue for me, and yet here was a possibility that I might have died at that juncture. Well, I didn't. Else I wouldn't be here, and at the risk of stating the obvious. And so I decided within days after that event and then some upcoming heart surgery and so forth, knowing that that was coming, I decided that I would get my financial affairs in order. I would get my will rewritten and brought up to date. But I also decided to write a letter to my family in the event of my death, particularly during surgery. I wanted them to know what I wanted. And so I started writing a letter. And somewhere along the line in writing the letter, I turned it into a contract. And I signed it, and I had them sign it. Essentially what the contract covered were items such as what to do if I come out of the surgery in a vegetative state, or ever I'm in a vegetative state, what are they to do? It's a clear instruction about living conditions. Under what set of circumstances, for example, in the future, when I can no longer take care of myself, what are they to do? What is it that I want them to do? Now, notice my language here, because this is different than what a lot of people think of, because most people, as your show a few weeks ago brought out, most people are reactive rather than proactive, meaning that the family waits until something occurs, and then they jump in and decide together, or don't, but they try to come to a consensus about what to do for mom or dad, and then how to implement that, given mom or dad's circumstances and financial realities and so forth. That's the way many people go. What I decided to do, and what I now advocate for my clients and for anyone who will listen, is to say, now that those of us in our early to mid-60s, that's my category, that we have an option, we have a choice, and that choice is to take control now. Now, while we have some form of compass mentis, we actually can think things through at this juncture. It's not reactive, it's proactive. It's deciding in advance. We know what's going to happen if we're lucky enough to live long enough. We know that functions are going to cease and the body is going to break down, and there are going to be more and more limitations as time goes along. And I know that people don't like to think about that, and they don't want to, and I'm not suggesting concentrating on it. I am saying, however, to be realistic and to realize that that's going to happen. And I just chose, and I'm advocating that others join me in this, I chose to not leave that to my children and their children to have to make tough decisions when the time comes. They have a roadmap. I gave it to them in the form of a contract that is as explicit as it could possibly be, that says in this instance and that instance, here's what I want. Here's what you're to do, to include a paragraph about pulling the plug. When may you pull the plug with me? And that's something I felt very strongly about. And I felt that I didn't want to leave that kind of very, very emotional decision to my children, who might or might not be able to make a clear choice at the time. But rather, I wanted them to have clear direction from me, saying, here's what he wants. And I have told them, if you have a question, as things occur, look it up. It's probably in the contract. See what I said. So I don't ever want anybody to have to say, oh, I knew him. I knew him well. And, oh, he wouldn't want to live like this. And, you know, many, many people who make that statement, they don't really know. They're saying really what they think, not what the person thinks. Well, that's not going to be the case for me or for people who write it out in advance and say, when I get to this point, if you see these things occurring, here's what you may do. And then with confidence for the rest of your life, you can live with that. Why? Because I gave you the instructions based on my values, based on what I believe is important, and not what you may think. And I think that's, you know, frankly, Bob, this is turning something on its head to a degree, meaning unlike what I thought I was going to do, unlike what so many people do, which is to leave things until it's a decision has to be made. But instead, what am I doing? I am, and I'm advocating others, hold control yourself. Keep control. Say it now so that they know what to do when the time comes, rather than leaving to chance that particular day that somebody's spouse doesn't say to them, what are you letting the old thing live for? You know, like that. I don't want anybody to have to be in that position. And believe me, in my family, there's that option.
I was going to say a couple things, if you don't mind.
By all means.
First thing is, Michael is a former uniform Marine. I won't say former Marine because, as I understand it, if you're a Marine, you're always a Marine.
But, let's not go there.
Okay, but you were. All right.
Yes, indeed.
Further, you were a corporate, whiz kid. And
they said,
talk about family. Oddly enough, I didn't know this when I first met Michael, but I worked with a branch of his family. Mm-hmm. And you talk about people that are interdirected. And control, they put all the letters into control, but they weren't, they didn't impose necessarily on everybody that they met. So here we got somebody that, was in, he was a Marine, even if you don't want to go there, and you were in the corporate part. And then all of a sudden this thing hit you. Did you have any idea, family history, that this thing hit you at 50?
No. No, I didn't. And in fact, had lived, from a health perspective, a charmed life. Never broke a bone, other than a head cold here and there. Never got sick. I seemed to be living that charmed life. And so maybe it was more dramatic to me than it would have been to others. But I'm glad for it in retrospect, since it was going to happen anyhow. At least it jarred me into thinking about my future. It was then that I decided my retirement dream, which everybody needs to have. I decided my dream, and I built it like bricks and added curtains and put the specifics to it. It was during my recovery period, which, by the way, after open heart surgery is quite a long time, and I had time to do it. And so I did that, and along the way, that's when I it became clear to me that I'm not immortal. I am going to die as all of us will. I'm not afraid of that in the sense that it is simply a part of life. It's part of living this in this world. It is pro tem. We are here for a time. We all try to avoid saying that, thinking that, but in fact, it is the underlying truth of our lives.
Okay. Now, for those of you all listening, and I'm sure there's a lot, please give us a call, 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Now, you can talk about what Michael's talking about. You could even talk about and ask a question about finance. You could even ask a question about tax. Maybe we're benefit light today, but anyway, give us a holler. And now, Michael, there are people listening, and their folks are kind of going through the same thing that you potentially are preventing. And what advice do you have to somebody in their 50s for their parents before their parents become uncontrollable?
Well, you know, Bob, I've been presenting this message and a social message, so to speak, on behalf of NITP for about 3 years now. And so I've been in front of a lot of audiences, and I mentioned this portion to every audience. Some of the feedback that I've gotten, some of what some people have said to me is they come up and say, you're absolutely right. I'm going to get home and talk to my husband about how we will behave here. But I'm concerned about my own mom and dad and the fact that they are in relatively good health now. But you're absolutely right. It's going to happen. And we just never talk about it. And so my response to them was, and I share it now with this audience, that in fact, it's if they're still able to think through their own needs and their own desires, asking about this topic is essential. And perhaps offering, if it's not a contract, at least an agreement of some sort that that where we express, I think it's important to be in writing. I do, because memories get fuzzy as time goes along and as urgency arrives. People can't remember exactly what was said or disagree. Though I'm sure she said to do this. Oh, no, I thought she said to do that, like that. That's why I emphasize the importance of writing things down. But to be able to approach our parents to say, we need to have this conversation because we as a family need to know your desires. What is it that you would want us to do? And be prepared that they may not know, especially if you catch them in an odd moment, they may not know, but you present them with the questions and let them think that through and make an agreement when to meet again to talk about their desires. And always it should be open for them to change their minds and so forth. But I mean, right down to details such as, do you wish to be cremated? Do you wish when you are ill and at the moment of death, do you want your organs to be harvested or not? I can see it in the eyes of every audience I talk to. They give you that look of icky. We've just gone into icky land. I know. But it's also reality land. It's also what is it that this person would want so that it's not somebody else's ideas that are being acted upon at the end, but theirs. It's their life. It's not somebody else's. It's not the kid's life. It's their life.
Do you do this in conjunction with a legal document that would involve an attorney?
I do it in an informal agreement. I always tell people the word contract is in parentheses because has hash marks because I did check this with my attorney. I showed him the document that I had written and asked him if this would be enforceable. And his answer was, with a smile, he said, "Mike, it's as enforceable as pretty much any contract. All contracts are only worth the value of the writer's, the signer's, and their goodwill when they signed it. They either intended to live up to it or they didn't. Can they be enforced later? That's what makes law cases." He said, "Would this stand up to court scrutiny? Probably not. But that's not why you're doing it. You're doing it to set the record straight, so that people will have an idea. If they err from it, if they deviate later, is there much you can do about it?" The answer is no, probably not. Those who are looking for that assurance, why don't you write it up and take it to a lawyer and see if she can turn it into a legally enforceable document within your jurisdiction. But the one that I wrote, I never went beyond showing it to the lawyer and basking in his humorous smile and listening to him say, "These are great ideas. You've been crystal clear here. I'm so glad. Is it a contract? Not really, but it's certainly the agreement. It's your instruction sheet." And he said, that is only as enforceable as the goodwill of your children to follow your desires.
Now, in your own case, not to air your stuff over the air.
Why not? I air it everywhere else.
There is no spouse, but there is a son?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Beyond that, though, so we got a unifocus here. When working with other people that might have a spouse and more than one child,
mm-hmm.
you would give the same direction, but how about their perception about me first?
Every group that I talk to, I also emphasize the importance of, as you craft the document, be sure to include your significant other, your partner, to make sure they understand what your desires were. And maybe if they have some pushback about something, you give them the opportunity then to express that, and asking them to make their own document. What is it that they want? Because they're not necessarily the same. And I know of a couple, in fact, who have very opposite views. She is a devout person of a particular faith, and following that faith, she cannot countenance being cremated. He does not follow that faith, and in his spiritual life, cremation is actually considered a good thing because of the environmental concerns and so forth. And he just as soon. So they disagreed on that point, but that's okay. They each have their own document. That's the instruction sheet. How are you to handle this as it becomes necessary? Yeah.
All righty, and then as far as after that, you know, how does the money flow? And most of our listening audience, if not all of it, we're probably talking about a decent retirement. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a different definition for decent, but there are very few listening that don't have what's called a defined benefit plan, where if you work a certain number of years and make a certain amount of money, you're going to get a payment for life. Outside of the federal sector, that does not quite exist like it used to.
Right.
So you've got that concern. Do I have a survivor's annuity? Do I not? Not everybody's married. And with this recent Supreme Court case, then it looks like, depending on what state you live in, there could be a survivor's annuity.
Mm-hmm.
So and guiding these folks, do you ever get in? Of course you get into family feud, so to speak. But at the end of the day, they're probably thankful that they did this sooner rather than later. I've had, parents, and, you know, they after a while, they didn't know what day it was. Fortunately, I was an only child, so I lucked out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, part of what I do now, Bob, is I'm a mediator for elder issues. Primarily, my focus in my practice is on family dynamics, family communications. So I facilitate a couple times a month. I facilitate a family's conversation about these kinds of issues, usually, again, often the elder is in the room, but not a participant because they're not able to participate any longer. And again, now it's too late for what I'm here talking about today for them, but now I try to help the family to talk to each other. And that is the reason they need somebody to help them to talk is that, as is the case in all family communications, roles from birth through old age, roles within the family don't change. Oh. The youngest is always treated as the youngest, even in their mid to late 50s. They're still the child, and they're told to hush by the elder sister who has become the grand dame and so forth. These are things they need somebody to help them talk. Now, in the course of that, one of the challenges has been to be sure that the best interests of the elder are being addressed, because so often the family, the dynamic is that the family loses sight of each of their, but it's there, but they lose sight of the fact that each one is there with the proposition for their own best outcome from this. They either a distribution of funds and a way of, you know, and the one I just recently did had to do with a mom, now a widow, moving from her home into care, and then what to do with the home, et cetera, et cetera. And the push from at least a couple of members of the family had more to do with their own need for the cash out that had been promised. And that's all they wanted to talk about. And they left mom out of it, out of the conversation. So I was glad to be there because I could give her a voice. And so, but to answer, or I guess to put this in the context of why I'm advocating today, making decisions about, and I've got a list of them, but decisions about our own future and communicating those for me to my son, because you're right, it'll fall to him. But I don't expect him to be able to think through all those things. I have thought them through because it's not about him. It's about me. Well, ultimately, it'll be about him in terms of what's left over after the dust settles.
Okay, can I role play a little bit here? We'll go back to two sisters. It could be the two brothers. It doesn't make any difference. But we got two sisters, one the grand dame and the other one the young upstart. And the young upstart says, Mom promised me the brooch. Not you. And this brooch happens to be worth more than collectively any of the other stuff.
Yes.
How do you mediate that?
Well, first of all, I say, let's look to the will. Now, because we've entered into another arena when we're talking about that. And yes, that does come up. And it can be much bigger things than a brooch. She promised me the boat, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you were there, you heard her say it. But she was drunk, you know, you get those kind of conversations. Now, I ask them all to please concentrate on the will that mom or dad or both have hopefully on file. Because in the end, that's what's going to decide.
Not a verbal promise.
Not verbal promises. It's what did she or he put into the will. That's why wills, and a couple of our colleagues who are lawyers would jump right in here to point out how important it is to be as detailed as possible in a will. Because in the end, those things can be decided by the state. The estate cannot be probated until all issues are settled. So when you get into this whole area of who said what when, and don't you remember when she said and so forth, all of that is frankly not interesting to the judge from what I've seen. That what the judge wants to know is, did she write it down? And if she didn't, we're going to liquidate it and you'll get a portion of the money. per her instructions, because that's what we follow.
More recently, from the tax side, somebody will come in and they'll be administering the will, but they're, mm-hmm. let's say, two or more. And let's go to the house. And invariably, one of them wants to live in the house. Now, why do they want to live in the house? It's because they can't afford a house on their own. I mean, with all due respect, this is usually the situation. And so, not that I'm so smart, I'm going to say, okay, what's the house really worth? And let's say that there are three of them. And let's make it real simple. Let's say the house is worth $300,000. And I said, okay, you own $100,000 of that. And if you want to buy the other two out, it's going to cost you $200,000. Now they're going to say, listen, I don't have the money to buy the house to begin with. Where am I going to get $200,000? Well, they get $200,000 less of the other stuff. Certainly besides the house, there's probably some stuff in the house. May or may not be any kind of significant cash accumulation or investments. But, you know, that's how that I would do it. I'm no attorney. I usually work with an attorney. But for whatever reason, some people come talk to me because they think I'm easy. And then I'll side with somebody. But you can't. You know, you have to treat everybody equally. And or it might not be a first home. It might be a second home. It might be at the beach. Mm-hmm. Not a grandiose home. It could be, you know, a very small place, small condo at the beach. And, you know, everybody wants that. And how do you just don't divide that up. You say, no, you're going to rent it during the hot season. And if you want to go down, then you split your time afterwards. Anyway, I'm getting off in my world. Let's come back to your world, world of reality.
Well, no, but those are all important considerations and things that can be discussed in front of mom and dad when they are still able to have those conversations, recognizing that someday they won't. But why not try to get these kinds of things into an agreement format? I think most lawyers push for that. They push for real specificity in a will codicil so that these things can be avoided. The situations you just suggested, classics. And there are many others. And the lawyers who do these things, they know them all. They've encountered it. And they usually have a methodology for avoiding the conflict later on. And they have a way of putting that into a document. One of the things I wanted to be sure to give to our listeners is I have a gift for them, which is that I have on my website a place where they can, at no cost, download a copy of the outline of my agreement with my family. And that outline is I think it's a checklist. I think of it that way. So that if they're wondering, well, gosh, what are all the things that I need to make sure I cover? If they go to my website, which is www.mybestdayistoday.com, www.mybestdayistoday.com, and they go to the section that says books and free materials. There will see a link that says care contract. Just if they move their cursor to and click on that link, what will happen is it'll open up in Word and download onto their machine, and there they have it. It is just an outline, but because obviously it's a little personal what I wrote into each. But although I will say this, there's one section that I left fairly filled in, and it's the section you alluded to this earlier, and you'll all love this. It's a section about what to do when I can no longer drive, when I shouldn't be behind the wheel any longer. And yes, I, for one, intend to live that long. I want this to be an issue.
Are you talking about males here?
I'm talking about anybody, that there's going to come a time. And here in the clear light of my mid-60s, I see it very differently, I think, through the lens that it's still off into the future, so I can be more objective as I think about what are the things. And so what I left in there for them to see is from my agreement with my family, there is one whole page that says, when you see the following things, and then has a listing, when you see the following, you are to come to me and point out that I am doing those things, and you are to then take my car keys, you are to sell my car, the money is to come back to me, you have to specify that in my family, and I, from that point forward, will find alternate means of transportation. That is what that section says. And by the way, I didn't make up the list of behaviors that they're to follow. I lifted them right off of the website of the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, that lists the 7 or 8 most common reasons that an older person ought not be driving any longer. They list those things. I did a little research, found that, and I put that right into my agreement. Asking that my family honor that. Now, by the way, on that page, my signature is at the bottom of the page. What I have asked my son to do, and in fact, he and I have now rehearsed it last Thanksgiving at our dinner table, before dinner, with the family surrounding, most of his kids thought it was a joke, we rehearsed him taking that list and sitting down with me and going through what he's going to say when the time comes. And he said to me, Pop, which is what they call me, he said, Pop, you said that when we see the following things, that we're to come and tell you this. And hold up the sheet, which he did. He held it up and he said, you see this list here? We've checked off 3 things from that list that you are now doing. Pop, you said that when we see these things, you are to no longer drive. These are your words. This is your intention. We are simply here today to follow through on your instructions. You see at the bottom, there's your signature. This is what you told us you want. So I am here, therefore, to follow through on your wishes. Now, I say to everybody I tell this to, I say, now, time out. How does this conversation usually go? Because I had it years ago with someone that, and it was ugly, someone who loved me very much, but who got real ugly real fast when they realized where I was going with the conversation, and knowing that I was about to ask for their car keys, and they started hiding them, and excuse me, just one second, and I had to hear those keys being put into a rat hole, you know, that sort of thing. Well, because the automobile represents freedom. I understand that. We, even when we're that age, yes, there still is an ethic to not taking the lives of others lightly. But we lose that through the lens of our own desire for freedom. And so I know how easy it is for this to become contentious. What I'm suggesting is let's change the dynamic. Again, let's turn it on its head. Nobody needs to come to me to say, we all think that you should now do something, not drive. Rather, come to me to say, Pop, this is what you want. We are simply here to follow your wishes. When we phrase it like that, now you might say, well, you think that's going to work? I don't know. I really don't know. What I do know is that I have taken the most affirmative position I can, which is to tell them here in the cold light of mid-60s that when I'm in my 80s, 90s, whenever, when I really am doing those things, and those things are listed, and you can get them when you download that document from my website, when you see those things, here is what I say you're to do. And in following through on that, I hope to make the conversation more helpful than hurtful. And by practicing it in front of witnesses, that everybody knows that this is what I wanted way back now, and can reinforce it when the time comes, rather than simply saying, "Well, we're just taking your car because we all think we should." That's not going to work with me, and I understand why it doesn't with a lot of people. I'm saying, don't ever say that to me. Come to me and say, here's what you wanted. Here's what you said. Now, we can argue that at the time. Well, I didn't really hit that trash can and, you know, like that. But that's a different argument than, how dare you? How dare you come to my home and ask for my keys?
Can I do this as an accountant and a car guy? there are seven things on your list, right, for taking the car away?
Mm-hmm.
And they've come to you with three. And you go, yep, you're right. Three out of seven. I'll drive three sevens less. Next question.
Yeah.
Can I do that?
Yeah. It says anyone, if any one of these is checked.
Yeah.
And again, that's a decision that I have made.
Okay.
Now, for the sake of everybody on the streets, I am making a decision. And I think it's a thoughtful way, but it's an adult. It's an adult way to handle a problem, an issue that is going to happen. If we're lucky enough to live long enough, if somebody else doesn't run me over, and some old person out at where I live, it doesn't run me over between now and then I'm trying to think about others in the future and doing it now and taking action, and also to take the pressure off of my son, who doesn't do these things well. I know that. And so I've given him an out, so to speak, or an easier way of saying it. So that is one of the, yes, and that's one of the important areas in the listing from my website. But it also includes such things as what to do when I become sick. And how sick is sick, in my opinion. I had my doctor help me to define that. What if it's just temporary? What if, and what if financially I can afford to do so, how long do you hold on to my apartment if I'm in rehab? At those kinds of, that's what I addressed in it. What seemed to me to be reasonable, and I did this with input from my physician, and I think I covered that waterfront pretty well. I also, by the way, now back into your area of expertise, I also addressed finances. And what I mean by that is, what are the things that will indicate that I need help with my finances, and then a little further down the line, that I need somebody to take over my finances? And what are some triggers? What are the things to observe that will tell you that it's time to have that conversation with me? Again, bring a copy of this. Bring a copy of the agreement to show me this is what you said. You said that when you're double paying for several months in a row, you're double paying, or you're skipping other payments even though you had the money, and so forth. When these kinds of things occur, when you're giving away money, although I guess I could be accused of that now, but if any of my family's listening, you didn't hear that. But I'm giving away way too much now. But if it gets ridiculous, that happens as we get older. Some nieces, grandnieces, and nephews, they'll figure you out. They do. And I've got already, my grandsons are some little movers, and they're only 5 and 7, but still, they both are at ages where they're already figuring out what a touch I am, and I know that's only going to, as they go into their teenage years, I will always be the ATM machine, and they'll know it. Now, when that gets out of hand, and I have specified what that means, when is it out of hand, that's the time that somebody else needs to become the arbiter, or the financial manager for me. And I think that, again, these are things, and notice the theme here, which is that here, relatively early in life, I'm trying to anticipate what commonly happens to most everybody, and set the pace and the tone and the set down the rules now. My rules, my judgment. Because after all, it's my life. Yes, it's their inheritance. Pitiful little that there is going to be of it, but it's their inheritance, yes, but that's all it is. And I've always told them, don't wait around for that. Instead, I'd like you, if you really want to help me, then follow my rules, not your own instincts. Follow mine. You'll be better off. I'll be better off because I'll be living the way I want to live, which is under my own steam and my own decision process, some of which I won't be able to do clearly in 20 years, I would say. When I'm in my mid-80s, I'm sure I'll be less clear about some of these kinds of things. I'm glad to have this out of the way now and be able to, we don't talk about it every time. There's no need to anymore because it's in there. It's in there. It's down there. And so.
Wow, there's a Billy Joel song, It's My Life. Da, 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 da,
yeah. Yeah. I'm not getting any royalties off of it, but yes.
nor am I. Just it came out of the back of the head. So there isn't a vacuum there. There is something. Okay. Now, you mentioned, the grandkids, pretty sharp kids, but that goes with the genes of your family. I'm not trying to stroke you, but I think I know a fair number of your family, and
yes.
I don't think there's a dim one there.
Yeah, we just haven't introduced you to him.
and I'm going to use the term hustler as a compliment. They're very hard workers. And can see things before they happen and generally very successful at what they do. Anyway, just I'm not patting you on the back. It's for those of you all listening that maybe have siblings like that or grandkids like that. Don't discount them. They may be young, but they got the genes. All righty. So now you say, how can people get a hold of these points? You mentioned something about
If they go to my website.
And how does one go to your website?
You turn on your computer, which is always a task for me, and go to the following website, www.mybestdayistoday.com. And go to the section for materials and books, and there you'll be able to download for free a copy of my care contract and a couple of other things that might be of interest to you.
That's a great website. I probably shouldn't say this on the air. Is it copyrighted?
The website?
No, the name. My Best.
Well, I own it until 2020, I think. I paid for it out into the future.
So you'll still be
a kid. I couldn't
believe
nobody had taken it, yeah.
All right, and I just want to mention that Mark Levine, he's an attorney that in Bethesda, and he does estate planning and things like this. And he'll be on the show 2 weeks from today. And I'm sure he'll bring up some of the legal issues, but the legal viewpoint of this. Not to say that it's not right. It's just, okay, mm-hmm. Here's an attorney that will affirm or da-da.
Sure. Good. And then, I'll listen.
Yeah. And next week, somebody from Social Security, Lester Austin. If you haven't heard Lester before, he's a powerhouse. Not that you're not. I'm going to have my ears cleared 2 weeks in a row.
Lester is with Social Security.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And he just.
I'm going to leave three questions for you to ask him.
Yeah. Okay, good. I mean, he just booms off the mic. And he's a terrific guest like you, like all the guests. Anyway, let's get back to Michael. So we've talked about the contract and you talked to families. Has anybody got up and walked out of the room and said, this won't work?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That happens quite often.
Do you know what the trigger point was?
For their leaving?
Mm-hmm.
Usually it had to do with repeated statements from some other family member. I'm happy to say, at least so far, it doesn't appear that it was me that said something, but some family member who would bring up a recent case, would bring up something from teenage years. These people are all in their 50s. But something from their teenage years. Once again, you're doing what you did then and so forth. And you didn't care about mom then and you don't care about mom now, that kind of thing. And the person said, I don't have to take this. exactly as you say, stood up and walked out. I suggested, by the way, that the family reconvene. Not just because it meant another fee for me, but because the family's not here now. And you need to make this
right. Did they come back?
You need to bring him back.
Did they come back?
Yes. Yeah, we're scheduled, and we haven't gotten back together yet, but
that's good.
We're scheduled.
Two worst fights I've ever been in business-wise. You know, I'm the accountant for a family business, and the language that came out.
Oh.
And I am no prude by any stretch of the imagination. You can ask anybody that. And I'm going, I wouldn't talk to my mother or father like that.
Uh-huh.
My father was not a big guy that he wouldn't smack me, but I had too much respect.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember this one. I don't want to remember. It was just awful. And it was a father
sure.
and a son. It was just. And I'm going, how do I get out of this small room? And unfortunately, the two of them were between me and the door. And there was a table in the way. So I didn't want to appear to be a wimp and crawl under the table. But I did. I just listened to it. Isn't this nice? Anyway, so you've had that situation. Now, have you had the situation where they got into the remembering the teenage years and now they're 33 years past that and you could talk them off the ledge?
Well, yes, because part of my job as a mediator is to keep focus on the here and now. Keep the group focused by pointing out we're now talking about things outside of today's issues. We are talking about things. You don't know. They always pointed at me. Oh, no, you see, it's just I wanted you to know what he did back then. I mean, because I think it's important. You know, he's here right now. He's presenting himself right now. Let's work with who's here, not with who was back 30 years ago or more. That is interesting, but that's between y'all. Has nothing to do with what we're here talking about. Not really. Oh, I think it is. No. So anyhow, yeah, that's part of the interesting job, I think, of a mediator, to be thoughtful and listen, but always keep the group focused on. I call it facilitation because it's not therapy. Mediation is not therapy. Mediation is finding the truth that exists between all positions. Where is their truth in the center? What is the common truth? And let's start there. Let's start and then build on that. What is it that we all agree to? And then let's build on that. But also, my role in elder mediation is to be the voice of the elder. Who sometimes can speak for themselves, but sometimes can't. And I don't mean just that they can't orate. It is possible that they're not thinking clearly, and they get stuck and they get sucked in to everybody assuming their roles and acting out within the small group, and that's easy for mom or dad to get sucked into. So I'm there to help them stay outside of that, get it back on point, and let's concentrate on the question. That's always the first thing in any mediation, is to clarify the question. What is it that we're here, and what's our concern? Why is it that we're here? What is our concern? So anyhow, that's...
Have you ever worked with families where there's more than one child, and one of the children is extremely successful, but goes off the deep end? I don't know how you, sometimes it's the music business, sometimes it's the money business, sometimes it's just to go off the deep end. Do you have these kind of contracts for the, if I go off the deep end contract?
I haven't actually worked with one like that. I would suspect that there's a role for a therapist in a case like that, to get them to a place where they can make the kinds of contracts and agreements that would be mutually beneficial for everybody, that really are informative on the one hand, but protect mom and dad's wishes on the other, so that there's clarity. But you're right. If one of the participants, one of the people to whom it's aimed, has gone off a tangent, and for any number of reasons, that's one. I'll tell you, the one that's been most painful, and it has been more than once, I will say more than three times, is where one of the family members is at some level into drugs, and everyone in the room knows it. Well, at least in one case, it was everybody but me knew this, and so of course I got curious as to why we were tiptoeing around and what was going on, and I called it out and was able to then find out that, well, one of the reasons Mom doesn't have any money left in her account is that on the third of the month, when she gets her Social Security check, she has a knock on the door from my sister over here who needs her drug fix. And then it went nuts from there. So that more often has been the case. And see, there is where I refer the family to a family therapist, because that's an issue that goes to another issue. It's outside of Mom's best interest, except to the degree that we can set up some boundaries that protect Mom and Mom's money. Most people on Social Security, not most, I'm sure many, are living moment to moment. They're check to check. And so that knock on the door is unfair. So,
more recently, I've had it where the elder parent, who was very good with money, became very bad with money and basically fortunately had a federal pension, but the family cash was gone. You know, buying into some goofy foreign thing. Anyway, it was sad because in the person's day, they were extremely smart. All right, Andrew, our ever-efficient engineer, thank you, Andrew, says, be quiet, Bob. We want to listen to Mike because we have less than a minute to go. So final comments.
Well, that I can say at this point is remember the principle that we have a choice, and basically the choice comes down to do we allow those who survive us to wrestle with how to take care of us, or do we take control now, assert ourselves, and tell them this is how it's going
to
be.
Okay, I have to assert ourselves. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, Michael. Thanks for taking care of us, Andrew. We'll be on next week with Lester Austin from Social Security. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.